Of the Pack Podcast. Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Card.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to an improbable victory version of Pulse of the Pack. This Sunday, December the 6th, happy birthday to my Aunt Annette, but that's not why you guys are listening in. We are here to talk about the miracle in the Motor City, and there really is no better way to describe it. I'm your host, Jacob Westendorf, here in a gloomy day at Rockford, Illinois. It's actually not snowing, not raining or anything. It's just kind of cloudy and blah out, but the temperature's nice, so I won't complain about that. Much nicer temperatures in Arizona, as always, I would imagine, with my co-host, Jason Perrone. Jason, have you recovered from the Hail Mary on Thursday night?
No, and I hope I never do. I could not be more still on cloud nine. My voice, as you can probably tell slightly, has not completely made it back, and I am more than happy to have to deal with that. It's definitely a good problem to have. Feeling good, and it's been a fun day of football. We're recording this, of course, on Sunday, and Packers got a whole week to rest up a little and get ready for this next game against the Dallas Cowboys.
That they do, and we're actually going to start the show with, what the hell else do you think we're going to start this show with? Everything looks bleak. It looked like the Packers are going to lose their fifth out of six games. When the Detroit Lions had a 23-21 lead, Rodgers was tackled on a desperation lateral play, but a face mask was called. You can debate the merit of the face mask all you want. The reality is it was called. It gave the Packers another chance. Rodgers took the snap, escaped some immediate pressure. He rolled to his right, and he launched the ball. The ball hung up there for what seemed like 10 minutes and came down. And my first question, I guess, I have here for you, Jason, is simply put, what was your reaction when you figured out that Richard Rodgers had caught the ball? And my answer is, I was called in to work that night, and I was not happy about it. Unfortunately, somebody else called in sick, so I had to watch the game from the newsroom here at work. Well, it turned out to be pretty fun, but everyone was pretty quiet. They'd all kind of stopped what they were doing to watch the play, which really bailed me out here, but I'm standing next to one of my friends that I was working with that night and just yelled, "Oh, my God," and calmly, yeah, right, danced around the newsroom. Because I've seen that play twice in my lifetime that I can remember. Obviously, the Fail Mary was called a touchdown. And another one that kind of gets forgotten about is the Hakeem Nicks touchdown in the NFC divisional game against the New York Giants in the playoffs the year prior, which really kind of put the Packers in a hole they couldn't dig out of. I've seen two of those plays go against the Packers. I can't remember one ever going Green Bay's way, and I was stunned. I was elated. I was happy. I can't describe it any better, and you know what it really made? Because a lot of my a lot of my friends around here root for other teams, and those teams don't necessarily like the Packers. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, this is still wrong, and this is still wrong, and you know what? That's fine, and they're right. But reality is I just wanted to take a day or two to enjoy the improbable victory. The Green Bay Packers won 27-23 over the Detroit Lions. My reaction was pure joy. I couldn't wipe the smile off my face. It was fantastic. Jason, your reaction, because I know you are the angry type during games, your reaction was what?
Well, yeah, I get angry when it's warranted, but for the past couple weeks, I really haven't gotten angry. I just kind of expect them to continue playing the way they've been playing, so my expectations are then adjusted, and then the anger factor is a little bit muted. But I have kind of an interesting story to tell about this and my reaction, because it kind of goes a little deeper than the play itself. You know, earlier in the evening, and those of you who follow me on Twitter and who read our work over at CheeseheadTV.com, you know, I write the game balls and lane calls column, and I alluded to it in my piece that went live on Friday morning. You know, earlier in that evening, one of my colleagues here at Cheesehead TV, Adam Check, had announced via Twitter that he had been diagnosed with colon cancer. And, of course, that was a very gutting thing to learn. And so as I'm sitting there watching this game and Green Bay is playing horribly, especially in the first half, things did look very bleak, and it was not fun to watch. But, you know, the whole Adam thing and his courage and braveness of putting that out there on Twitter kind of put everything into perspective and really reminded me again that, you know, this is a football game and it's meant for entertainment. And what gets lost a lot of times with fans, and myself included too, I'm very guilty of this as well, is that it's entertaining if your team wins, and if it's not, then you're even more upset because you just wasted 3 hours of your day watching your team fail to get done what you hoped that they would get done. And they only play one game a week, and then you have to wait 7 days for them to get another chance and listen to your friends chide you for it and all that kind of stuff. So I was kind of just sitting there blank, I guess, for lack of a better term. And when the ball went up in the air, I first thought to myself, that has got to be the highest pass I've ever seen in my entire life. I mean, Rodgers got air under that ball like times two. And as I'm sitting there watching, as I watch football, you know, the ball goes in the air. I don't watch the receiver. I don't really watch the ball. I kind of watch the space in between the receiver and the quarterback, because I just kind of like to watch what's developing with the defense. And so I'm watching this whole thing unfold, and the first thing that popped in my mind, and this is obviously all happening at, you know, quick split seconds because it was a quick throw and play, is that it seemed like an awful lot of white jerseys were at the front of the wall in the end zone, which is odd because my thought is you don't want that if you're trying to prevent those white jerseys from catching the football. So that was my first thought. And as the ball is coming down, I watch Richard Rodgers come over and get in position. And as he goes up into the air, he's got the prime position on this ball. And my eyes widened, and I flashed back to the playoff game against the Atlanta Falcons when Tremont Williams had an interception in the end zone where he's on coverage and he's beaten by a step, and Matt Ryan throws a fade to the back of the end zone, and Tremont Williams just leaps up, turns around and intercepts the ball, and he gains that prime position on the wide receiver, and the receiver just had no chance to catch it. And we all know that the Lions played this play very poorly, and it's been broken down several times, so we don't need to get into that. But he caught it, and I just started screaming, "Richie, Richie, Richie," running around the house. My poor 2-year-old son's trying to sleep because it's late, and I just started screaming. I think I jumped into my wife's arms, and it was just, like I said, my voice is still not totally recovered from that. I mean, we'll be lucky to see something like that go our way again. And actually, Jacob, last year, the Arizona State Sun Devils beat USC on a similar type play with Jalen Strong streaking across to steal a Hail Mary pass from the USC defense to beat USC in California. So that's two in 2 years for me. I think I definitely need to thank my lucky stars and count my blessings. But what an amazing moment.
Absolutely an amazing moment. The funny part for me is sitting here, I can picture that reaction you have absolutely 100%. And you did mention something far more important than the football game, and I apologize. I did not lead with this because I meant to and kind of got in the swing of things with the show and forgot to do that. Yes, Adam Check. Adam, if you are listening, our thoughts and prayers here at Pulse of the Pack are with you. You know, we firmly believe, as the saying has become coined, you are going to kick cancer's ass. We fully believe that. And, you know, our thoughts are with you, our prayers are with you, that not only will you be able to see more and more Packers games in the future, more importantly, see your family and friends and all that stuff as you defeat this disease. We are on your side 100% with this. To get back to football, and there's really no way to transition out of that, despite the win, there's a lot of things still plaguing the Packers offense. A lot of their points were scored on, I call them gimmicky, lucky kind of plays. You know, Starks fumbled. It was recovered in the end zone by Randall Cobb. That was one touchdown. They scored on a Hail Mary, and one of their touchdowns was scored following the Julius Peppers strip sack that led to a touchdown by everybody's favorite Packers receiver, Davante Adams. I guess with all that being said is, you know, the Lions' defense is okay. It's not an elite unit by any stretch. You know, how do we feel about the offense right now? And I still have some legitimate concern. Now, I understand, I know that by the end of the game, J.C. Treader is a backup, Lane Taylor is a backup, Don Barclay is a backup. They were playing with three backup offensive linemen for really a good portion of the game. They played the whole game with their backup right guard and right tackle. And I understand that, but even still, you know, drops are plaguing this team. They're not getting a lot of separation. Aaron Rodgers, one of our touchdowns on Thursday was Rodgers escaping and running about 30 yards for a touchdown with man-to-man coverage. The Packers are just scoring in weird ways. Now, I'll take the win, like I said. With the way the Packers have been playing, an ugly win is always going to be better than a beautiful loss, and I will always contend that. It is always better to barely win than to just lose. But the Packers aren't going to be playing the Detroit Lions now. They have a game against the Dallas Cowboys at home, and the Cowboys will be without Tony Romo, so that shouldn't be a difficult game, I should say, but the Packers haven't played well at home, and I'll get into that later. After that, they are at Oakland, at Arizona. Arizona is very good, and then they have a home game against the Minnesota Vikings. Those are three quality teams they're going to be playing from here on out, two of which are on the road. I'm not feeling good about the offense just yet. The running game was stagnant most of the night again after back-to-back 100-yard games by Eddie Lacy, and we will definitely talk about that. The passing game continues to struggle. It almost just looks like they run a play and hope it works, and that's not a good way to run through your passing offense. And, you know, the offense just, it's not a good unit right now. I think it's okay to say that, you know, 12 games into the season. Now, they've been good enough on all sides of the ball to be 8-4. But 2-4 since the bye week, and it's not going to make people feel very good. And I'm one of those people. So I think the offense still isn't a good unit. They still need to have their breakout game. And I think at this point we're waiting for a breakout game that may never come because this offense may not be capable of that. Jason, how do you feel about the offense?
The offense, I mean, yeah, we talked about the, you know, it's been said many times that this victory didn't fix much. There's still plenty of issues. And I think that that's true. The offense, what I will say is that I don't, you know, want to continue to sound naive, but all it takes is a couple of big plays like this to kind of get some confidence and some mojo back. And so that's all I'm really hoping for against Dallas. I mean, the offensive line is banged up. It's tough when, you know, you've got the kind of revolving door going on there. We saw what happened when David Bakhtiari came out for one frickin' snap. Aaron Rodgers nearly loses his head. And so that obviously is a factor. We're going to get into the running game and issues with the running back group a little bit later. So, you know, these things are definitely not to be ignored. The passing game is just, you know, it's very sporadic at best. Defenses are having no problem covering these guys, and they've figured out how to slow this offense down. And if you have an offense that's based a lot on timing, rhythm, and things like that, then that's the defenses are going to have success once they kind of figure that out. And I think ever since the game against the 49ers, they just haven't been what they were the first 3 weeks of the season, where they were lighting it up all together. So the offense has its work cut out for it. You know, hopefully with the extended time off, we'll see Brian Bulaga and TJ Lang back against Dallas. Mike McCarthy always says if these guys are healthy, they're going to play. After what we saw against Detroit, I can't imagine that they would want to hold either of these guys out if they can go. So I'm hoping that will help, and that's actually going to be something that I'm going to mention later on when we talk about matchups. So with that in mind, you know, and I don't know if we have an update on Ty Montgomery. I don't think we do, and I don't think we'll get one until Wednesday at the earliest. I don't think that Ty Montgomery is any kind of a linchpin to this offense, and like his absence has really been the reason why they haven't been clicking. I mean, he's a rookie, and he really was just starting to kind of come on when he got hurt. I think it can help definitely to have him out there, and you know, so that could really, because James Jones has really fallen off, and he's obviously, you know, not a 1, 2, or 3 guy anymore. He's a 4th, 5th, you know, safety net type of guy. He kind of peaked early in the season, and now I don't think we're going to see a lot of that on a regular basis anymore. So, and then, you know, I haven't even talked about Aaron Rodgers, and I think Rodgers is still making some pretty good throws. The touchdown pass to Devontae Adams that you mentioned was really nice. You know, it was a nice throw. It was a great catch. It was a good route by Adams. He actually made a nice adjustment to get himself in position to catch the ball. So those are the kind of things that this offense needs to start doing more of. Hey, you know, that victory may have sparked something. It might have turned a light bulb on. It might have, you know, lit a fire. And they're back at Lambeau Field. They've lost 2 games in a row. You know, this can't continue to go on, I'd hope. So, you know, you mentioned that it's Matt Castle and that the Cowboys really shouldn't, you know, put up too much of a fight. But I have a feeling that, you know, it's going to be more of a game than it should. And it's probably going to be for a lot of the same reasons that we've been continuing to see over the past few weeks. But I think the big thing with this offense too is don't turn the ball over, because they've turned the ball over at least once, you know, in the last 3 or 4 games, and you know, they can just play one game turnover free. I think they give themselves a great shot, and those are all obviously very rudimentary answers, but you know, this offense has just been so crazy and weird that it just continues to linger on, and until we see 2 or 3 games in a row where they're clicking, and that's going to be really tough to do, because they really weren't clicking. Even though they beat the Lions, they weren't clicking at all. And then you've got Dallas followed by Oakland on the road. That's no gimme at all. And then they travel to Arizona to face the Cardinals. And if there is no gimme in the NFC, it is that game. So it'll be tough to do. It's possible, but it's going to be a big test for the offense, because they got to start scoring more points if they want to win games late and then get into the tournament.
Absolutely do. And one positive that developed today was the Minnesota Vikings were dismantled by the Seattle Seahawks 38-7. So as we speak here, the Green Bay Packers are back in first place in the NFC North. So maybe some of that doom and gloom about missing the playoffs was much ado about nothing. There are 4 games left. We will see how they go. You mentioned weird and goofy and all kinds of different adjectives to describe the state of the Packers offense. I think really, in a nutshell, the Packers offense can really be seen by the running game. The backfield has no rhythm to it. There's really no rhyme or reason to when guys are getting in the game. And during the game, that seemed even more so the case, because after back-to-back 100-yard games, Eddie Lacy had 6 carries on Thursday night. John Crockett made his debut. Alonzo Harris was surprisingly released just hours before kickoff, which really kind of told me right away, because the Packers don't tend to do those things, that something was up. I just didn't know what. John Crockett made his debut. I liked him coming out of preseason more than Alonzo Harris anyways, but the Packers like Harris more, enough to keep him at least, and sign Crockett to the practice squad. So that was interesting, and then we come to find out that Alonzo Harris and Eddie Lacy both missed curfew for the Packers on Wednesday night. Eddie Lacy is going to go down, and I can guarantee this, whenever we do our off-season show, the biggest disappointment of the season is going to be number 27. And that's incredibly obvious to me, at least at this stage. The Packers' running game has not been what a lot hoped it could be coming into the season. They thought that Lacy was going to have a breakout big-time year, and he's really been with issues of weight, issues of conditioning, issues of now what appears to be lack of commitment. A couple weeks ago, you know, the Packers have sent him subliminal messages of sorts throughout the season. He's been benched in the middle of games. He was told in the media that James Starks was the number one running back, and now they put him in the doghouse without it being released that he didn't make curfew. And there's another, the first time the Packers played the Lions, Lacy practiced every day during the week and then was inactive when they played the Lions that Sunday. That spoke volumes to me because it seemed like it was more than just an injury issue. Right now, your current feelings on Lacy have got to be one, disappointment, and really I think that's about as far as it goes, because this is a guy that when he's been committed, and he has been the last 2 years, the first 2 years of his career, he's been a borderline star at the running back position. You know, the Packers haven't had a running game that they can really count on since the stages of Ryan Grant early in his career, or even before that, consistently with Amon Green on those Mike Sherman teams, and that was over 10 years ago. You know, the Packers just haven't had that option in their backfield. Now it looked like they had it, and it looked like Lacy was ready to be the big-time guy, and he hasn't been that. He just hasn't. You know, you're looking now, you start wondering ahead. The Packers worked out Monte Ball when they returned from Detroit, and to me, they didn't sign Monte Ball. But I think that there's some sort of message being sent to Lacy that, hey, you better figure this out or we will find your replacement. And I'm not saying that the Packers could cut Lacy at the end of the season, because they tend to let these guys play out their contracts no matter how disappointing they may be. But I would be very surprised if you hear about any negotiation whatsoever with Lacy for a contract extension, because the first question I had when I was talking amongst some friends, you know, as the game ended and as the game was progressing, was if this guy's not motivated when he's not getting paid, and by not getting paid, I mean top-level running back money, what's his motivation level going to be like when he is getting paid? And there were already questions surrounding whether or not Lacy was going to get a bigger second contract, because his running style is not conducive to a long career. He seeks out contact. He's a punishing runner, which is what makes him great. But at the same time, in the long-term focus, it's what makes him a potentially bad investment. Now you add in issues. Every year we have the same conversation. Is Eddie Lacy overweight? Is Eddie Lacy in shape? Now we're having the conversation of, is Eddie Lacy even committed enough to be a good player in the National Football League? Because realistically, Lacy's had about 3.5 good games this season. The last 2 weeks were pretty good. He was good against Chicago. He rolled his ankle against the Seahawks the following week. Was kind of limited against the Kansas City Chiefs, and then had a pretty good game against the San Francisco 49ers. So when you put it all together, 3.5 to 4 good games for Lacy, it's disappointing. And at this point, I'm to the point where I'm fine with whatever they do with him. If they want to give him the treatment of you're our best player, because Lacy is the most talented back on the Packers roster, I think that's been proven. James Starks is very good in a niche role, 10 to 15 carries, you know, 10 to 15 touches, kind of the spellback of sorts for Eddie Lacy. He's not good as a bell cow. John Crockett is a practice squad guy. Maybe he could become something, but right now we have no idea. You know, Crockett had a very good debut, all things considered, but he also ran the wrong way on his best carry of the night, ran the wrong play, and then nearly fumbled on a carry that ended up netting him a 4-yard loss. So the Packers need Eddie Lacy. I think that has been proven over the last couple weeks and the course of the season, really. But I don't think that the Packers can afford, because it feels as if Eddie Lacy has this attitude of entitlement. He knows he's the best back on the Packers roster, but he refuses to work like he's the best running back on the Packers roster. And Mike McCarthy has said before that entitlement is the enemy. Right now, Lacy has a lot of enemy in him, or so it appears at least. And I'm not okay with the way he's conducted himself this season from what you can see. Because it's clear that he's fallen out of favor. You know, the Packers, they get this reputation, and perhaps deservedly so, that they are loyal to a fault. They'll continue to use the same people that are, quote-unquote, their guys because they believe so much that they can come out of whatever slump they're in. They don't change things up. They've changed things up in their running game. That, to me, says all you need to know about how their current feelings are about Eddie Lacy. He needs to start playing better, and I believe, and I said this, as soon as Jordy went down, and even more so as the season has progressed, if the Packers are going to reach some of those aspirations they have, which is Super Bowl or bust, they want to play in Santa Clara in February. In order to do that, Eddie Lacy has to be the Eddie Lacy of old, not the overweight, missing curfew, entitled Eddie Lacy. In summation, Jason, what are your feelings on the state of the Packers running game, and specifically number 27?
So we talked about, I mentioned Lacy a little bit earlier. You kind of broke down all the ins and outs of what's going on with him and the team, and as far as what he did and why he wasn't out there sooner against the Lions. You know, we haven't heard this kind of a, you know, if that is in fact the attitude that Lacy has, we haven't heard those kind of things said by a Packers player or openly. And again, you know, we don't know if that's exactly the case, but we haven't seen something like that. I don't know if you remember during the 2007 season when Atari Bigbee was a rookie. He came out of nowhere in training camp. He was kind of the annual undrafted guy that made a huge impact. And he was, NFC Offensive Player of the Month or Player of the Week. And so he wasn't working as hard. And, you know, he had some issues in a game, and I think some reporters asked him about it, and he basically just replied with, I just want to remind you, I was the NFC Offensive Player of the Month or a week or whatever. And so if that is the case with regards to Lacy, that is really disappointing. But he's been a disappointment all year anyway, regardless, even if that's not the case. And I think you're right, Jacob, I don't think there's any question. You know, when we preview 2016, or when we're reviewing the 2015 season, which I still hold out hope can not be until February, that is obviously going to be the most disappointing thing about this Packers team, you know, either side of the ball or in any phase. It's going to be Eddie Lacy. He just has not been contributing as needed. I think we all really thought the Minnesota game was going to be the turnaround because – they put up more points. Lacy ran for 100 yards. They won the game convincingly. It's like, okay, this is the Packers team that we're used to seeing, and we thought things were back on track. And then came the clunker against the Bears on Thanksgiving night, and we quickly realized that, okay, maybe it is not the case. So then, you know, we still don't know what we have with regards to Lacy. We know he doesn't love to watch football or the game or anything like that. And that doesn't mean that he's not worth being out there. He's not a good player. That just means that, you know, he doesn't love football during his off time. And, I mean, I think, you know, if you think about a lot of us that have jobs where we go to the office every day, I certainly don't do what I do at work at home when I come home. So, I mean, I guess I can understand that. You know, not everybody loves what they do as much as others, and we've seen examples of other players that don't. But this attitude here is costing Eddie Lacy dollars. He's going to get paid. Somebody's going to pay him, but I have a feeling at the present state right now, and I don't know what it would take to get this turned around. I mean, I guess he still has one more year on his deal next year. I mean, to turn it around and get that money from the Packers. But, you know, one of the suggestions that was made over the last couple of days is if the Packers grow so disenchanted with him that they try to move him during the off season this year, you know, as he's entering the last year of his deal. Now with running backs, you have to be careful because their shelf life is a little bit less or lower or, you know, smaller. Their window is smaller. And with a back like Lacy, who's had injury issues and the way that he runs, I think he's definitely probably going to be a guy that doesn't play as long. I mean, people compare him to Jerome Bettis in terms of how long he could play, not in terms of how good he is, but in terms of how long he could play. Yeah, I guess I could see that. But I don't know that Eddie Lacy has got what it takes to make his career last that long. He's not getting and the offensive line, you know, you can point to that a little bit, but Lacy's just not, you know, he's not running well on a consistent basis. And this issue, you know, I'm glad the Packers brought Monty Ball in. I'll tell you this right now, Jacob, I don't know what your take on that is. I don't think they intended to sign Ball at all. I think that was nothing more than to make a statement to this team that your job is not secure. We will bring somebody in here to work out during the week and take your place in a heartbeat if you can't get on board with what we're trying to do. Because this is, we're the Packers. We expect to succeed. We expect to win games. And if you're not contributing to that mindset and that mentality and that culture, you're going to be gone. And it doesn't matter who you are. I mean, Eddie Lacy was the offensive rookie of the year two seasons ago. And when Aaron Rodgers went down, this is the same guy that this team leaned on to keep them in contention long enough that they actually won enough games that when Rodgers came back and beat the Bears in week 17, won them a division, and they actually had a chance to win a playoff game at home against the 49ers. And again, Lacy was a big part of that. And now all of a sudden, 2 years later, he's not even the best back on – he's not even the, you know, you said the most talented back on the roster, but I can't say he's the best back right now. It's just – it's very disappointing for a team that hasn't had these kind of issues. And this is one of those things that also points to, you know, this team and the overall mentality. And is there something else going on in this locker room in terms of the players and how they're responding to the coaching that is off? Because we just aren't used to seeing this. It's just uncharted territory for us. And disappointing, again, is the only word I can keep coming back to, because we, like you said, Jacob, we got to see more out of 27. And I'm hopeful that somehow, some way, he can pull it together. While we're talking about the running back position, I like what I saw from John Crockett. I'm more of an eyeball test guy. So you mentioned some issues that he had, which was actually the first that I've heard of it. And I actually, you know, kudos to you for catching on to that, or at least, you know, wherever that came from, because everybody's been, you know, enamored with Crockett. Oh, he's fiery. He's great. We love to have him. You know, they need this spark on offense. He provided a spark to the offense. He did. I mean, I like his mentality. I think the Packers did the right thing by signing, you know, moving him up. Now, interestingly enough, they wanted to re-sign Alonzo Harris to the practice squad and decided not to, because Harris was the running mate with Lacy and missing curfew. And so therefore, you know, they don't sign him to the practice squad because they don't want him to be, you know, it's kind of the same reason why they didn't re-sign Andre Rison. They didn't want him to be a bad influence on Antonio Freeman, who was still young in his career at that time. So, you know, hopefully they get the right guys, the right mentality going on. Things can be okay, but like we've seen, been saying with this team for the last 3 or 4 weeks, you got to show it to me. I don't believe until I see it. Lacy's just, he's got to get his head in the game.
Absolutely, and I wanted to go back to the Ball workout, because you mentioned something about how, you know, they're sending a message, and I wrote a story saying as much. And it's a little different, too, when, you know, because NFL players always bring up how, you know, they come in on a Monday and they see guys coming in that play their position and they're, you know, it's, you know, nothing's ever guaranteed in this league. And that's true to some degree. However, when they bring in some no-name corner from who gives a damn state, like, that's not the same as bringing in a guy like Monte Ball, who had the pedigree. He played at Wisconsin. He has name value to him, to where that name alone might scare a player or two. And I know Ball hasn't proven anything in the NFL. He's done very little, if anything, once he left Wisconsin. However, he was a former second-round pick. That means that enough teams thought highly enough of him that Denver had to take him in the second round. That's a talented player. That's different than bringing in some no-name guy. And there are plenty of no-name guys that have become good players. You know, Kurt Warner comes to mind, for example. But it's not the same as bringing in one of those no-names to take a spot of a player who's well-established. If the Packers had brought in some no-name running back on a tryout, another Alonzo Harris type, Eddie Lacy wouldn't have been worried. I doubt he would have thought twice about it. And to be honest with you, I don't know if he's thought twice about the Monte Ball thing. But bringing in a guy with a name brand value like Monte Ball, that matters to some degree as to what you can see their feelings are about Lacy. It's been disappointing. It's been a disaster. It's been all those bad adjectives you can think of as far as Lacy's been. And I think that bringing in Ball is kind of their final message before they say, hey, we're done with you. Lacy's got time to turn that around. We will see if he does that. I want to talk about the defense now in the game, as we usually do. The defense really did keep the Packers in the game, and I know they were definitely a culprit early for the 20-0 deficit, but once Calvin Johnson scored a touchdown to put them up 17-0, they gave up 6 points the rest of the game. They really kept the Packers in the game to give them even a glimmer of hope at the end. Once it was 17-0, I turned to a friend, and maybe this makes me a bad fan, I don't know, but I turned to a friend and said, this team could be ugly. I mean, we're talking like 34-10. You know, or like that game in Detroit on Thanksgiving a couple years ago when Matt Flynn played. That level of bad is what it was starting to look like, and the defense didn't allow that. I would say the defense is solid. It's not as great as it may seem. I still want to see them perform well against what's known as a good offense, because since the bye week, the Packers have made Peyton Manning look good, they made Cam Newton look really good, and they've played pretty stingy since then. But those have also been against some bad offensive teams, Detroit twice, Chicago. Minnesota to me looks like a team that, you know, they're kind of like what Bill Simmons has coined, a good, bad team. You know, they beat all teams they're better than. They don't beat anybody that they're worse than. That looks like what the Vikings are. They got dismantled by the Seahawks today, as I mentioned earlier. And the Packers defense looked good against them as well. So I still want to reserve my judgment on the unit as a whole before the end of the season. I don't know how good this defense is, but I am willing to wait and find out. I will say I have more confidence in them than I do in some previous units like 2012, 2013, and eventually most of 2011. I thought 2011 at some point they would figure out that they had a lot of talent on that side of the ball, and then that never materialized. As we all know, it was one of the worst defenses in NFL history. But there are two guys I want to talk about because they did get some experience, and they've gotten a lot of publicity on this show. The first thing is Jake Ryan was the starting inside linebacker against the Detroit Lions. I thought he played okay. Nothing spectacular, but it wasn't a noticeable drop-off from Nate Palmer. And we've had this theory on the show for weeks, Jason. If Nate Palmer is going to be nothing more than average, if there's not that big of a drop-off from him to Jake Ryan, why not let Ryan cut some teeth? He did make some plays. He had a share of bad plays as well. But I think he's a kid that can learn from those and become a better player down the road. And maybe the Packers will reap the benefits of that down the stretch in December and into the playoffs. The other one is Quentin Rollins. I thought Rollins had an average game. Made some nice plays in coverage. Was ultimately beaten on what we thought would be the dagger third down throw to T.J. Jones. But that was really just a hell of a throw from Stafford, so I thought. Rollins had, he was inches away from knocking that pass down and making a play. He missed on the Lions' final field goal drive, it looked like he kind of pulled up short and could have stopped Stafford from getting a first down. He didn't do that. Stafford got a first down. Eventually, it led to a field goal that the Lions made to extend their lead. But for the most part, to me, it looks like Quentin Rollins is going to be a really good player. Demarius Randall has been a really good player. I'm excited about the future of the secondary. One other thing from this game is Julius Peppers, after an absence, and what seems to become the norm for me is I write a story asking what a player is doing, why he's not playing well, and then they make a play. Julius Peppers makes a strip sack after the Packers' first touchdown that leads to the second touchdown to Devontae Adams, gets the Packers right back in the game. Big-time play from a guy they need to be a big-time player. All things considered, you know, the defense saved this game for the Packers. So, Jason, feel free to give them a little love and also a little bit of critical analysis if you're not a believer just yet, sort of like I am.
Well, okay, so we'll start with Jake Ryan because I've talked about Jake Ryan several times. I thought Jake actually played, I would say a little better than decent. I mean, he led the team in tackles, which is an arbitrary stat. He had the fumble recovery on the strip sack by Peppers, so he was in position to do that. I mean, we've never seen Nate Palmer make a play. I mean, I have to wonder if Nate Palmer is on the field if he somehow doesn't recover that ball. So I'm going to give Jake Ryan a little bit more of his due there. I mean, I was calling for him for weeks. I mean, since we saw what he did against Carolina, where he, you know, made some tackles, he's going to make mistakes, and he's not going to be perfect, but he's only going to get better with continued reps and snaps on the field. And it's now is the time to get that to him so that he is ready for, you know, very important games later on, hopefully should those be available to the Packers. So I tweeted to you, you know, earlier that, it, you know, Jake Ryan is starting over Nate Palmer, and I'm like, oh, so I guess the standard for becoming a starter on the Packers is that you must, you know, the, your incumbent must play terrible for 4 weeks in a row, or in this case, maybe 12, 11, because, I mean, it was clear to me pretty early on that you can't really lose much more by putting Jake Ryan out there than you have with Nate Palmer. So this has to be a permanent thing. I think it's about a month late in the making personally myself, but, you know, again, I'm sitting on the outside looking in, and this coaching staff is at practice every day, so they see things that we don't. But I think at least in this case, it's turning out to be a correct, you know, desire and prediction on our part to have Ryan out there. And so more than happy to see that. And that's a great thing. Quentin Rollins, he's there. He's around the ball. I thought he was maybe a step behind on the, you know, that third down conversion. He missed it by, you know, a good couple inches, which, you know, I mean, he stretched out. He just couldn't make the play. I like his attitude. I think he's kind of a gamer. I think he plays well in game situations. He shows up. He's not, you know, not afraid to make plays, because it just seems like sometimes players are afraid. They have the play in front of them, and they're just not stepping up and really taking charge and making it. You know, they're a step slower. They just seem to be kind of standing there in quicksand. And I'll use A.J. Hawk as an example. In the last 4 or 5 years that he was with the Packers, A.J. Hawk would sit there, receiver would catch a ball right in front of him, and he would just kind of stand there and let the receiver come to him instead of going up and making a tackle. And so, you know, Quentin Rollins is getting after it, and that's the kind of thing you need to see. Corners in this defense, you know, obviously are called upon to do a lot of, you know, a lot of things in coverage and getting after the ball. This has always been a defense that, you know, preaches taking away the ball and turnovers. And I think Quentin Rollins is going to have quite a few more before his time is up in Green Bay if he keeps playing the way that he is, which is to say that he's playing very well. And Randall didn't play in this game. He missed this week. Hopefully it's a short-term thing with him and that he'll be back at practice this week and he can get back out there, because, you know, they need him. He's proven to be an important part of this defense already. And so having him out there can only do good things and help the defense. And so, again, hopefully he gets healthy. You know, defensively, you can't really say that this unit is letting the team down. I mean, yeah, they give up some big third downs. And, you know, as much as we laud Peppers for the strip sack and that he finally showed up and make a play, he also lined up in the neutral zone on third and 12, which shortened the field a little bit. It didn't give the Lions a first down, but it gave them a more manageable play to run, and they converted it, of course. So, you know, when you're a 14, 13-year veteran, one thing I would like to think that you are aware of and are able to do is stay on sides, or at least, you know, pre-snap. You know, everybody gets drawn off every once in a while, but pre-snap, you know, be aware of where you are on the field and maybe know that you're lined up on the ball. I just that one kind of baffled me, because Peppers is not, you know, he's not getting paid like a rookie. We didn't get some great major, you know, discount for bringing him in. I mean, he's making close to $10 million this year, and I think we've seen the best that we're going to see out of him, and I don't think he'll be back after this year. But, you know, that was like kind of two steps forward, you know, two steps back. You're kind of breaking even there. But, you know, the defensive line, can't say enough about those guys who continue to, you know, make plays and led the charges, led there by Mike Daniels and Dayton Jones. You know, I think this defense is primed. If you take, you know, hopefully they can stay healthy. I think this defense is primed to actually elevate and peak at the perfect time, which would be right now, this last quarter of the season. And this is going to be the unit that's going to take the Packers as far as they're going to go this season, which is, again, so strange to say because it's Aaron Rodgers and his offense. But this is the identity of the 2015 Packers. But I like what I see. I'm very encouraged by what I see from this unit, and I think they'll continue to improve as long as they stay healthy, because these young guys are contributing. And we talked last week, Jacob, about draft and develop. If you're going to go that route, the young guys have to contribute. Otherwise, you're not going to win 10, 11 games. You're not going to get into the playoffs, because you keep bringing these young kids in. You're letting the older you know, I say older in terms of football years, you let your aging veterans go, you're counting on guys to learn and perform. And that's a big gamble to take there. You know, they talk about the gamble on signing a free agent and overpaying too much money for him. And, you know, it's been theorized many times that when you spend big money on a free agent, you're paying them for past performance that they did with their previous team, and you're hoping that they can do the same for you. And that's one of the reasons why Ted Thompson doesn't like to do that, because, you know, you look at some of these teams like the Saints, for example, and, you know, just look at a team that's got a, you know, that just redid their quarterback, the 49ers and the Bears for a minute there too. You get handcuffed a little bit by where you can spend money to rebuild your team if you do that. So, you know, on defense, very good thing to see the Packers rookies contributing, because, again, they're going to be the key to the success these last four games, and hopefully they can continue to play well. Like I said, I'm encouraged by what I see.
Encouraged is a good word to use from here on out. That leads us to the Mayfield play of the game. Duh. Okay, seriously, the Hail Mary is the Mayfield play of the game. I don't see any other option that could be picked. However, for the sake of discussion, I don't want to make it so easy. I do want to say, aside from the Hail Mary, my Mayfield play of the game is the Julius Peppers strip sack, and my Waukesha Sports game ball goes to Richard Rodgers. I think it's time for me to give him a little bit of love, because even before the Hail Mary play, Richard Rodgers had a hell of a game, and I've given him a lot of flack. And I believe it's still deserved. You know, I still think that a lot of my questions about him are valid. One game certainly doesn't erase all those. However, he was the Packers' best pass catcher on Thursday night. And I think that's deserving of a game ball. I think that hopefully maybe this turned the light on for him. I know he's not the fastest guy. I know he's not the most athletic. But the Packers do need him to kind of play above his talents, which they've gotten guys to do that in the past. Rodgers needs to be one of those guys. So my game ball, Waukesha Sports game ball, is Richard Rodgers. My Mayfield play of the game, aside from the obvious, is the Julius Peppers strip sack. Jason, any objections?
I have no objections. I'll go different just to give our listeners something fun to listen to, because, you know, everybody wants to hear my voice, right? So, obviously, yeah.
Not really, but, you know.
Right. You know, insert Jacob. Obviously the Hail Mary is a play of the game. So I'm going to actually go my Mayfield play of the game. Other than that, I'm going to give it to the Davante Adams touchdown. Because, again, there was a subtle adjustment that he made on that route on the slant there that got him in position to make that play. So it was a great throw by Rodgers. It was a good catch by Adams. First touchdown of the year. He caught a ball. You know, let's give him some credit there. You know, I'm not trying to reward very – poor performances that he's had the last couple weeks, but I thought that was a great play, and it's the kind of thing to where, like, you know, I talk about confidence over and over and over again. It's ad nauseum here. I say it every week. But Devontae, you know, if that's the kind of thing that gets Davante Adams saying, hey, you know what, if I just think about it, if I prepare here, if I, you know, I can make these plays, I can do this, I can get open. Oh, I'm developing myself as a pro, then he'll continue to do that because he knows that he can. You know, I mean, obviously you start having more fun doing something when you're good at it and you have success with it. So I'm hoping that he can build on that and stack success here, he being Adams. You know, and then for the game ball, you know, I thought about giving it to Aaron Rodgers just simply because that throw was incredible. It was amazing. Have they done a sports science on that yet?
Not yet, but I would imagine one has to be coming soon.
Yeah, it does. That was incredible. Just the height, the trajectory, the throw. Any questions about Aaron Rodgers' arm, that now that he's 32 years old, I think those got quieted and answered pretty quickly at the end of that game there. So, but I'm going to go Randall Cobb for being heads up and falling on the James Starks fumble to give the Packers their first touchdown. You know, you mentioned very early in the show, the Packers were scoring, but it was in fluky ways, you know, and like you said, you know, win close then lose completely. And that's fine. I mean, I think we can look back to most any season and whoever the Super Bowl winner was over the last 20 years. And I'll bet you every single one of them probably had a couple games that were down to the wire, maybe came down to a, you know, a call here and there. or they might have gotten lucky with the turnover. So I'm not going to take that away from the Packers and that they, you know, they got it done when they needed to. I mean, yeah, two fluky touchdowns, the fumble recovery, and then a Hail Mary at the end of the game. But, hey, they got it done. So Mayfield play of the game, Devontae Adams touchdown, game ball, Randall Cobb.
Game ball to Randall Cobb and Richard Rodgers, meaning for more reasons than just the Hail Mary. We discussed the next matchup. That is the Dallas Cowboys at home. It'll be the first time that the Dallas Cowboys have been at Lambeau Field since last January. And we all know what happened. The Green Bay Packers defeated the Dallas Cowboys in their playoff game. So I'm going to get this out of the way right now. Dez did not catch it. Maybe you think that that should have been ruled a catch. By letter of the law, that pass is incomplete. And there were still 4 minutes left in the game when the call was made. So, for everyone that is not a Packers fan, stop acting like that call cost Dallas a victory. Because reality is, if the Cowboys get that catch awarded to them, they score a touchdown. They are up by anywhere from 1 to 3 points, and there are 4 minutes left in the game for Aaron Rodgers, who had torched the Cowboys defense the last two possessions for touchdowns, to go down the field and either get a field goal for a win, a field goal for a tie, or a touchdown for the win. So, no, that did not cost the Cowboys the game. But my annoyance rant is over. What matchup do you like the most for Green Bay going into this game, and what matchup worries you the most? For me, the matchup I like the most, I like the pass rush and the defense overall against Matt Cassel. Like I said, this is a bad offensive unit, and the Packers tend to do well against units like that. The pass rush, I think that there are some holes in that Dallas Cowboys offensive line that was supposed to be the greatest of all time that you can get after the quarterback in. Dez Bryant is a transcendent talent. He's very good, but Matt Cassel is not Tony Romo. This seems like the type of game where, as of today, it's supposed to be raining and a little cooler. This could be the kind of game that Dez touts in, kind of gives up, and outside of him, there aren't a lot of receivers that really scare you as far as getting down the field, making big plays against you, even though Terrence Williams did have a big play in last year's playoff game. I still like that matchup a lot. I think the Packers can get after the passer. I think Cassel can turn the ball over a lot. As far as worry, I'm going to kind of contradict myself here, but the Dallas offensive line in the run-blocking game, while they're not the greatest offensive line ever assembled, which is some of the most ridiculous stuff I've heard before the season started. We hadn't even played a snap yet. They're still very good. I still think that they can open holes in the running game. The Packers' run defense is improving, but I still don't think that's something they can hang their hat on, say they're a good run defense. One way that a bad quarterback can stay in the game against a team that is superior, and I do think the Packers are a superior team to the Cowboys right now, especially without Tony Romo, is running the ball and keeping them ahead of the chain. I want to check after the game on Sunday and see how many times the Cowboys either ran the ball on first down or through what was in essence a running play, one of those smoke screens that you see the Packers run, things of that nature. I'd be willing to bet that number is close to about 80%. One sneaky matchup I mentioned, you know, not a lot of guys that scare you. Cole Beasley is definitely a matchup that's a little scary. He's a slot receiver, tends to be the kind of skilled player with a skill set that tends to haunt the Packers defense. But overall, I'm going with the run blocking in the offensive line. I like the pass rush in the defense if they can keep the Cowboys behind the chains. I think the Packers can force some turnovers. So I like the pass rush. I don't like the run blocking. Jason, what do you got for me?
Okay, so we'll start with the like. And one stat that I looked up about Dallas is that they actually are kind of towards the bottom of the league in terms of sacks on the quarterback. They have 20 on the year, and there's only six teams that have fewer than that. So for the Cowboys in terms of what they've dealt with in injuries, a lot of those have been on the offensive side of the ball. Their defense is supposed to be a strength, but not necessarily getting to the quarterback. Now, we've seen teams that have not done very well in rushing the passer all of a sudden have a lot of success getting to Aaron Rodgers. And so I don't want to jinx it here, but I think that the offensive line, Green Bay's offensive line, provided that their starters are all back, could could end up, you know, having a bounce back day and do a better job of keeping Aaron Rodgers clean. And I really hope that they do, because Dallas has Greg Hardy over there. And while he's not lighting up the league by any stretch of the imagination, he's a little crazy, and he's the type of player who, if he sneaks free or gets in there, you know, he could end up doing some damage. And we can't afford to see Aaron Rodgers getting hurt. And so that's one thing I would hope would not happen. So I like the Packers offensive line against the Dallas pass rush. I think the numbers would indicate that there's an opportunity there for Green Bay's offensive line. In terms of the matchup that worries me, you know, I talk all the time about Packers letting the obvious things beat them when they should have prepared for them. So I don't like any matchup, any defender matched up against Dez Bryant. I think Dez Bryant is one of the best receivers in the game. He may be the best receiver in the game. And so I think that's a tough draw for anybody, whether you're Sam Shields. You know, Sam Shields played well. He had another good day against Calvin Johnson. That touchdown that Johnson had against Shields was just a phenomenal catch. And a good throw by Matthew Stafford. And as much as it pains me, you got to give credit where credit is due. So Sam Shields, really, I mean, there's not much you can do. That's Calvin Johnson for you. So I think Dez Bryant and Jason Witten at tight end, you know, Witten is certainly getting very long in the tooth, but he's on this roster for a reason. He's still making the tough catches and getting the tough yards. He's still a guy that, you know, the quarterbacks like to go to. And when you get a quarterback like Matt Castle in there, a backup or a younger quarterback, you know, either of which, you know, Castle's not young, but, you know, either of those two, they tend to kind of look for the tight end. The tight end becomes that security blanket. And, you know, I could see Jason Witten having one of those throwback games where he has double-digit catches and he has way more yards than he should. And the Packers hopefully see this coming, and I hope they have a decent game plan to kind of take him out of it, because, you know, I could see Witten and Dez going off and becoming a big problem. So those are my two. You know, offensive line I like on the positive side. On the negative side, I think the Packers might have their hands full with Dez Bryant and Jason Witten. But, you know, if the defense can get to Castle and even just knock him around a little bit, even if they're not getting sacks, just hit him. You know, kind of like how they did against Nick Foles and the Rams game earlier this season. I think that could set the defense up really nicely for a rattled Cowboys offense. And then you mentioned Dez quitting. He might do that. I mean, that would be a Dez Bryant thing to do if they're playing really badly. But he remembers that playoff game a year ago, and don't think that he doesn't want to atone for that in some way, shape, or form and silence the Lambeau Field crowd, because he feels like he got cheated. And as far as my take on that last year, if we haven't already gone over it before, you know what, if you have a problem with the ruling on the Dez Bryant non-catch because it was not a catch, then you need to don't complain to the referees. You need to complain to the NFL Rules Committee, because the way the rule is stated, we all don't sometimes know what a catch is. But if you want to catch a football, the smart thing to do is secure it, go to the ground, and sit there for 2 or 3 seconds, because then – there's no doubt about it. I know he was trying to lunge for the end zone to make a play, but by doing that, he extended the action of catching the ball. And by the ball coming loose before his body came to rest, it then became an incomplete pass. So that's my take on that whole thing.
There you go. A little rant from last January, since we were not together when that took place. The Packers won't be awarded an NFC Championship trip if they were to win this game. However, they would be awarded 9-4 and really in a good position to win the NFC North for a fifth consecutive year. So that leads us to the final segment of our show, what I am now calling the prediction sure to go wrong. I think, Jason, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe you and I have missed every game, whether the Packers would win or lose, since they played Carolina. I believe that we both picked Carolina to win that game. But after that, we both picked Green Bay to beat Detroit. We both picked Minnesota to beat the Packers. We both picked the Packers to beat the Bears. And we both picked the Lions to beat the Packers. So we've gotten all those wrong, which doesn't make me feel good about the way I'm leaning with this. But I think it'll be another ugly game. It won't look pretty by any stretch of the imagination. But the Packers are a better football team than the Cowboys right now. Tony Romo's not playing. DeMarco Murray is not back there anymore. They just are limited as far as weaponry goes. I think that they're, even with this compromised Packers offense, I think there are some holes that can be exploited. You know, you mentioned Dez Bryant remembering last year's playoff game. Maybe catching a touchdown and playing the Cowboys will give Devontae Adams a bill of confidence. Maybe he can flash the same ability he showed last year against the Dallas Cowboys, which is in our intro. I think Devontae could have a good game. I think that the Packers' offense will do just enough, and I think the defense holds it under control. I like Green Bay 20-13 over the Dallas Cowboys. Jason, prediction sure to go wrong is what?
I would like to defer. I'm honestly, you know, you sent the script over, and another good job putting the script together. You know, you do that every week. I want to give you some props for all of the shows that we've done. For those of you out there who don't really know how the production behind the scenes go, you know, I usually set the show up in the online studio, and Jacob does the script, and he does a fantastic job. So I knew that this question was coming, and I feel like the student who didn't do his homework, because I still have no idea where to go with this one. You know, I try not to be a superstitious person, because I just think that's kind of a hokey way of looking at things in certain senses. So I'm almost inclined to continue with what I have been doing right by doing it wrong, which is getting the picks wrong, and take the Cowboys here, because it just doesn't seem logical. But those are the games that the Packers have lost. Their last two losses have come in games and against teams that they had no business losing to. So I'll say this then. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to do this. My heart says, and obviously this is the pick that matters the most, because the heart is, you know, wants what it wants, right, Selena Gomez? Yes, I just alluded to Selena Gomez on this podcast. Go ahead and hashtag it and tweet at me afterwards. I'd love to hear from you. My heart says that the Packers are going to win this game, and I think they're going to win by at least 10 points. So I'm going to go 24-14, because I still don't see them putting up a lot of points until I see it happen. So 24-14 is my heart pick, but my head pick, I'm going to go with 21-20 Dallas, just so that there's at least a part of me that's feeding into whatever force is keeping the Packers from winning games they should win, more importantly, home games.
So there you have it. Bets have been hedged in the prediction statement of the show. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Pulse of the Pack. You can follow me personally at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason at Jason Perrone. Want to thank our sponsors, Waukesha Sports and Mark Mayfield Sports. We appreciate all that you do for us. And I do want to go one more time before ending the show. Send out your thoughts and prayers to Adam Check. Diagnosed with colon cancer, he's going to kick cancer's ass. We fully believe that, and we hope the Packers do the same to the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. Packers 8-4 after a Hail Mary victory, taking on the Dallas Cowboys at home Sunday, 3:30 kickoff Central Time. Should be a heck of a game. Looking forward to it. Send us questions, comments, concerns on the show at our Twitter page. Thank you, as always, for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.